the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, you've been told if you're planning for retirement, it's all about your number. That's what you're told from the financial industry. But there are new concepts and a new paradigm that is emerging in the area of retirement planning. It's about funding. It's about flooring. Some concepts we're going to be talking about on today's program. Joining me as my guest is Dr. Wade Pfau from American College. And Doctor, let's begin with talking about how, at least in the past, retirement planning, at least from the Wall Street perspective, was, well, you got to get a number. And if you get this number, you know, you're going to be worry-free the rest of your life. The financial planning industry is moving in sort of a different direction. And I want to talk about this new paradigm in retirement. In fact, there's, I believe, two new designations out there. There's the RMA, which is the Retirement Management Analyst, and the one at your college, which is the RICP.
The Retirement Income Certified Professional.
How do these concepts differ from, let's say, the Wall Street view, which is gather a bunch of assets, and if you get a certain number, you're okay?
Well, so there's big differences about retirement income is really distinct from traditional wealth management or investment management. Like an example that I like to use as a sort of the birth of retirement income planning, Harry Markowitz won the Nobel Prize for developing modern portfolio theory in 1990. And that's this whole idea of asset allocation and building a diversified portfolio, finding the efficient frontier. And after winning the Nobel Prize, he was asked how that applies to household investors. And given that this is really everything taught to investment managers, his answer was pretty surprising that he said he never thought about it before. And he realized after thinking about it for an evening, modern portfolio theory was never meant to apply to households. And that's really the difference there, where retirement income comes in and has to be viewed in a different manner. There's different risks than just the traditional investment approach, which was about accumulating, growing wealth, and just relying on this notion that if you have more wealth, you should be able to spend more in retirement.
You know, this really changed, and maybe we can move to this discussion next, and that is, when I got in the business, Doctor, almost close to four decades now, you know, individuals had defined benefit pension plans. They gave them 60 to 70% of their salary when they retired. You threw in Social Security on top of that. Most individuals that retired were getting pretty close to their salaries as a combination of those two, and they were both predictable. You knew what they were going to be. That's not the world we live in today. Defined benefits are rare today, more what we call defined contributions. So there's one factor. The second one was the advances in medicine that people are actually living longer. So unlike when Social Security was first put into place where males were expected to live to age 65, now today the life expectancies are 25, 30 years for a retirement planning couple. How has that changed the retirement planning environment?
So it's really put the emphasis on households having to make these decisions. With those traditional company pensions, you didn't really have to worry about it. The employer would take care of things, and the employer would rely on pooling risk across a large number of people so that they could pay everyone a pension based on people living to their life expectancy and getting an average kind of market return. And then at that time, as you're saying, people may only live on average 10 to 15 years into their retirements. Today, as people are living 25 or more years in retirement and they don't have that traditional company pension that was able to pool that risk, if they're just relying on an investment portfolio, it creates this really complex problem where they have to determine how much they can spend so that they don't run out of money, but they don't know what kind of investment returns they're going to get and they don't know how long they're going to live. And that just pushes people to just not be able to spend very much in retirement if they're focused on a traditional investment, wealth management type of approach to the problem.
So when you take a look at this new paradigm for planning, we talk about funding and then we talk about flooring. And when we talk about funding, the analysis kind of pairs people into three categories. You're overfunded, constrained, or underfunded. Let's talk about those concepts for a moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's really the key. It's not so much about, sometimes I hear it expressed as, are you wealthy or not? Well, it's more about how much do you want to spend relative to your asset base? And if you're overfunded, it means that your spending level's quite low relative to your asset base, and that an investment portfolio in that sort of case should be able to work. You're pretty unlikely to run out of money. It may still not be the most efficient approach to take, but it has a better shot at working. If you're constrained, you're more at the borderline where the kind of spending level that you're trying to achieve with your assets, it may work, it may not work. It depends on what happens in the markets in your retirement as well as your longevity. And then the constrained approach, I'm sorry, the underfunded approach is, well, you're spending at a pretty high rate and you really do have to be more concerned about the possibility that you may outlive your assets in retirement.
Yeah, and that's really important because when you just look at the number, if you don't relate it to what your lifestyle or spending is, you could have millions of dollars, but if your spending and lifestyle is at a high level, then you can outrun your assets. And we've heard and we've all read stories about famous movie stars, people that you thought were wealthy and had a lot of money, ending up dying broke or next to broke. And it reminds me of the recent passing of Burt Reynolds. I mean, he was almost impoverished at the end of his life. So, you know, numbers don't mean anything. It's really your lifestyle. Let's move on to the concept of flooring and why that's important for individuals when they consider moving into retirement.
Instead of thinking about everything coming from your investment portfolio, I really try to think more about positioning your assets. You've got reliable income, a diversified portfolio, and then reserve assets. And flooring is really just about that reliable income piece. How do you feel about, in regard to your essential types, or essential or fixed expenses, how do you feel about taking market risk for that? And would you rather have some sort of contractual protection? So you can think about building flooring first with things like Social Security, and then with traditional company pensions, relatively secure income sources. And if there's still a gap between what you have and what you want to spend, well, you could look at either using a bond ladder type of approach or a time segmentation where you're having bonds maturing each year to support spending. Or you can bring in risk pooling with something like an annuity where you have that contractually protected lifetime income as a way to build that floor for reliable income.
Yeah, the other aspect that is taking place too is taking one's retirement and segmenting it by age. And let's talk about how this plays out with not only flooring, but planning for expenses like they segment age 65 to 75. They call that the go-go years. Age 75 to 85, the go-slow years, and then 85 plus the no-go years. And I've seen this in my own practice, doctor, where individuals retire at age 65. Now they have all this free time, so they're taking long vacations, a lot of trips overseas, seeing things and doing things that, and being very active, things that they weren't able to do, let's say, during their working career. And then you see them sort of slow down between the ages of 75 to 85. I have a doctor right now, just got back from a trip, and it was a two-week trip overseas to Australia and China. And he said, boy, it took him almost 2 weeks to recover. So, you know, that's what we call the go slow. And then I've got clients 85 or over that are in sort of, let's say, retirement homes. So let's talk about spending and how that might vary during each one of those segmented years.
It's one of the big questions out there. The kind of standard assumption is that you don't see that phenomenon. And so it's a more conservative assumption that you always anticipate needing to grow your spending with the overall inflation rate. But the household data makes clear that for the typical or average person, spending does decline with age. And so we see things, a more recent development, David Blanchett's retirement spending smile, where your spending in retirement is like a smile. It decreases in those early retirement years, but sometime in your early to mid-80s, as health expenses start kicking in more, spending starts to come up again. But still, overall, it stays lower than an assumption that you're always growing your spending for inflation throughout retirement. And if you anticipate having such a spending pattern, that does allow you to retire with less resources than otherwise. It's with David Blanchett's spending smile, with that pattern of spending, you could have retired with 17% less assets than if you were assuming your spending would always grow for inflation. So it's important to think about what kind of spending pattern you'll have. And then that can also have an impact as well on whether you use traditional bonds or TIPS, or whether you want inflation protection built into your annuities and all that sort of thing. It's an important consideration in determining the best strategy to take.
Yeah, and this is really important, I think, because we are one of the risks, and I want to get to risk here shortly, is, you know, this longevity risk that people run into because people are living longer, so assets have to carry them over a longer period of time. And that concept of flooring, you look at traditional forms of income, you look at Social Security, maybe a company pension, and then if there's still a shortfall where you want to be reassured, let's talk about annuities, because depending on who you talk to, if you talk to people like yourself, and especially people in the academic world of retirement planning, they love annuities for their predictability. If you talk to people on Wall Street, they don't like them. Why do you think that is?
There's one prominent financial planner who runs commercials that are very confrontational, but it's really just a marketing message. The I hate annuities and so should you. The way things have evolved, advisors who charge based on the amount of assets they manage, if they recommend an annuity, that would take away from the asset pool. And so that would reduce the ability to charge their clients for asset management. And that, I think, leads to, you know, I speak about annuities a lot at conferences with financial advisors that are anti-annuity, so to speak, although it's changing in the recent past, no longer as vehement as it used to be, because people are increasingly seeing the power that risk pooling is able to add to a plan. But nonetheless, just this idea, well, the insurance company is going to go out of business, so the annuity has no value, or it's too expensive, or you don't really need it because the stock market's going to grow at 8 or 12% a year, in some cases, people say, and not really reflecting on how the nature of risk changes in retirement. It's back to this point about Harry Markowitz. Modern portfolio theory was never meant to apply to the household's problem. It's an assets-only model instead of the household's problem of trying to fund their expenses. And advisors who are set in that old investment management type of framework don't understand how taking distributions from assets amplifies investment volatility, or how to manage longevity risk, really aren't prepared to understand the value of annuities as part of a retirement income plan.
Yeah, and I don't think most people realize when I got in the industry, those defined benefit pension plans that companies used to provide employees were simply annuities. They had a pot of money. They went to an insurance company. They said, Mr. Jones and his wife are this age with this pot of money. What are their choices and what would that income be for the rest of their life? I want to move on to something else that's different when you think about retirement planning, and that is looking at the balance sheet. And one of the things that stands out in retirement management is assets are looked at differently. You have human capital, for example, employer contributions. You have social capital, which is Social Security, pensions, income from trust, maybe an expected inheritance. Then you have traditionally what we call financial capital. Those are assets in retirement accounts, personal investments. And then there's, of course, other assets like a home, real estate, business ownership. How do all of these come together? Because one of the things that we're talking about here, which is so much different, is sourcing a predictable, dependable level of income that you can count on. And one of the problems that people face today is, you know, this number of 10% long-term market returns. Well, that's great in theory, but it surely didn't play out that way from the years 2000 to 2013 if you were in a, let's say, S&P index fund.
The starting point for thinking about retirement is not what's the safe withdrawal rate from an investment portfolio, but how do you match household assets to the liabilities or the expenses? And that's where there are all these different assets on the retirement balance sheet. I think it's easier to just break them down. What is your reliable income assets? What is the diversified portfolio? What are the reserve assets? And then position your home equity, your investment portfolio, your Social Security benefits. Match them to the appropriate categories and put together a plan by linking your assets to your liabilities. And those liabilities are just the expenses associated with the financial goals of retirement, which I refer to as the four L's: your longevity, your lifestyle, your legacy, and your liquidity. There's the expenses associated with each of those, and matching the assets to those expenses to build the most effective and efficient overall plan is the starting point. So you've got to look at that entire retirement balance sheet and all those different kinds of assets, which Social Security benefits, but even things like community and family support, or, you know, if you're part of a civic organization, if you have long-term care insurance and everything else, it all fits together to build the overall plan.
You know, one of the concepts and one of the risks, I guess, in the world that we live in today, if you go back to when I got in the business, when you did have a defined benefit pension plan and you had Social Security, that pretty much took care of you during your retirement years. You didn't have to worry about, you know, what the Fed was doing. The Fed was raising rates, whether they were lowering rates or the stock market crashed, or most individuals back then, I call them the World War II generation, didn't have those kind of worries. You take a look at investors today, Wade, and I'm just thinking of the year 2000. If you were retiring then, the stock market had been going up almost 15% a year. Interest rates on conservative investments were 6 to 7%. But that's not the way the next two decades unfolded.
Right. And that's where, to the extent that you worry about those things, you don't necessarily want to have reliable income or your basic retirement expenses dependent upon getting good returns from the stock market. You kind of want to look at other types of approaches. There may still be a role for stock market investments, but that's more for some of the discretionary types of expenses or for legacy or just for part of that liquidity piece, but not for the what I call the longevity expenses, which are your kind of core retirement expenses that you've got to be careful. And some people worry more about that than others. There's this concept of longevity risk aversion, which is the fear of outliving your assets. And if you have a lot of fear about outliving your assets, you can be almost paralyzed in an investment management framework where, because you worry about living a long time and you worry about bad market returns, you're just afraid to spend your money in retirement. And so
You're bringing up a good point, because I want to talk about when someone retires, as you mentioned, Markowitz said, you know, modern portfolio theory wasn't made to solve household income problems. But I want to talk about the retirement matrix risk that individuals face. Most people, when they think of risk, they think about the stock market. The stock market could go down. A company you invested in, like, let's say, a General Electric, omits its dividend. Interest rates go down. So those are what we call business or financial risk. But I want to talk about three other kind of risks that you have to take a look at. Political risk, for example, inflation or public policy risk. The government shuts down, Fed raises rates. Behavioral risk, which is really, as you just talked about, your spending patterns, and then also what I call unsystematic risk that we don't think about. You just mentioned one of them, longevity. There's health risk that, let's say, you get seriously impaired, or what I call shock risk. I had a client, I think they were 66, 67, their daughter passed away, and they ended up having to raise their grandchildren. Well, that was something that they weren't planning on when they retired at 65. So let's talk about the risk outside of the market.
In that regard, yeah, I've seen the kind of matrices you're talking about. Is I've thought about how to better organize those risks. It's basically, there's three risks. There's the longevity risk of just not knowing how long the financial plan will last. The market risk, and that's where I include any sort of macroeconomic things, so like increasing taxes or changes to the Social Security benefit rules, market volatility, changing interest rates, and that sequence of returns risk when you're spending from your assets. And then spending shocks is where I would put everything else. That's a lot of what you're saying, like helping other family members in unanticipated ways, major health expenses, long-term care expenses, even something like a divorce that wasn't planned in retirement can really, well, at any point in life, but particularly in retirement, because you have less capacity to make adjustments, you get this big spending shock outside of your budget. And those types of risks can really derail a plan as well.
Yeah, we've seen this recently. One of our clients is going through a divorce, and now instead of having two Social Security checks, there will be one. And instead of one big asset pool, it's going to be divided in half. So both parties are going to be living a different lifestyle as a result of the divorce, because they won't be able to pull all those assets and income together. And it's going to make for a different type of outcome. Let's talk about where this is going and how this might change in the future. At American College, you have your designation, retirement income specialist, and then another institute has the retired management analyst. Do you see a lot more prominence of these two designations? In other words, teaching the financial industry to look at this not from a Harry Markowitz point of view and market risk, but more from income planning in household planning than previously.
So the retirement income certified professional at the American College started in 2013. And it's already had more than 16,000 advisors go through the program that it's grew to be for the American College has been around for 90 years and was originally created to professionalize life insurance. So the CLU designation for life insurance professionals was always the biggest designation until the RICP came along and dethroned it for the first time in these 90 years. That there's just so much interest in retirement income that it's been a really huge boost to the American College to be in that space and to really have the leading designation for financial advisors seeking more education on retirement income planning.
Can you tell us a little bit about the program, what you're emphasizing? Because I know you've played a lead role in both designations.
Mm-hmm. So the RICP designation, it's a three-course sequence that you can enroll in. And it's mainly interviews. Well, there's a study guide and interviews with leading experts from all over the different topics in financial services, 18 different competencies that works you through the whole process. And then, yeah, earlier on in about 2011, 2012, I did work with the RMA designation as well. And there, I know they've made changes since that time. They had I don't know exactly how it's structured now. I know they recently just had a conference where they had 10 or 15 people go through the program. But it's based on that kind of, they call it the household balance sheet and the floor and upside type of approach. So at the time, it was one class. I think they've changed how that's structured. But it didn't take off in the way that the RICP did it. You can see on their website, there's less than 200 people, I think, that have gotten the RMA. I think it first started issuing the RMA designation in about 2010. So it is a little bit older than the RICP. But I mean, either one helped to give you that better education on how to think about retirement income planning topics.
Yeah, because I think one of the things that has emerged, I mean, we have 10,000 baby boomers heading into retirement daily. And I think that continues for the next decade. So you're looking at the largest retirement population in the history of the country. And we're dealing with issues that, you know, we didn't deal with, or at least when I started my career and got my CFP back in 1981, you know, you had the defined benefit. You had Social Security that pretty much covered you. You didn't have to worry about market risk. If you had any money left over, that was kind of like icing on the cake. And then all of a sudden, you know, people started living longer, medical technology advanced. And then also we had, you know, especially over the last two decades, where we had two bear markets that were rather severe within a short span of time, and then also the lowest interest rates in recorded human history. I think if you and I were having a conversation in 2000, I don't know if any of us could have seen what would unfold in the ensuing two decades.
Right. Well, the market valuations were very high in the year 2000, and that could suggest to people that things might be a little tougher on a forward-looking basis, but no, certainly to the extent that we've seen with the drop in interest rates and the major bear markets we've experienced, it's difficult to approach a very long retirement with just relying on an aggressive stock allocation and an investment portfolio and the idea that the stocks for the long run, where you can rely on stocks outperforming bonds. It may happen, and perhaps the odds are even in favor of that happening, but there's no guarantee behind it. And if you're worried about that, you're kind of left in this position of, well, how do you spend? And you feel like you have to cut your spending. So it's a tough challenge people face in this new world with increased longevity and the pensions are no longer there in the way that they were in the past.
Yeah, so you have not only pension risk, you don't have the stability. Obviously, a 401k plan doesn't provide you with assurances like a defined benefit plan. And then also you have all kinds of market risk. Doctor, as we close, you've been doing this for quite some time. If there was one piece of advice you would give to somebody that was planning their retirement right now, what would that be?
To think holistically, like we were talking about, where retirement's about a lot more than just the investment portfolio, but all the assets on the retirement balance sheet. And to really start with that and to start positioning reliable income, diversified portfolio, and then reserves. And there's a lot of other kind of small details too, like don't double count assets. You can't count an asset as being a liquid reserve if you've already earmarked it to cover your spending and so forth. So to just start thinking more systematically about these things.
And perhaps have a retirement plan. So, well, Doctor, I want to thank you for joining us on the program and many kudos for your advancement in the thinking and retirement planning. as you're considered one of the leading experts in the field. And for any advisors listening to the program, look into that RICP offered at the American College. Dr. As always, it's a pleasure having you on the program. All the best to you, sir. And by the way, Happy New Year.
Thanks. Yeah, you as well. Thank you. Take care.
The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.